red. It's awesome. Flash.
Good afternoon, Sam. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How about yourself?
I'm great. It's been a fun holiday weekend here in the U.S., Labor Day, which I don't really know it's for, but it's free day off.
Well, so. No idea. You enjoy that. Well, that was a very unconventional intro. No, welcome back to Red Talks Clash, just straight in. I'm loving it.
Yeah, so as a couple people are asking in the chat, this is a podcast. We are moderators of r/Clash of Clans, and we've been doing this for a year and 3/4-ish, right?
Oh, far too long, yeah.
A lot. Yeah, we're going strong. We're doing well, I think.
I'm impressed, because I remember when we first launched this, we kind of thought, oh yeah, we'll try it once or twice and maybe drop it, but, you know, almost 2 years on now, still going.
Yeah, we'll have to do a cool 2-year celebration.
Yeah.
Make a clip.
It's got to be making fun of Spencer, right? It's got to be the Spencer episode.
I have a massive list, and I don't know when we're going to do it, but I have a giant list the crazy stuff that Spencer does. And we're just going to have to go through them all at one point. Like, maybe 2 years would be a good spot for that.
Yeah, I think a good anniversary gift would be making fun of Spencer, who is currently ill right now, if anyone's wondering why it is just me and Rick today.
We got a whole lot of stuff to talk about. Stuff that's been eating at me for a while. And then at the end, go ahead and you are more than welcome to ask us questions. And we will discuss anything you guys bring up in chat. But to start us off, it is a chess month in Clash, apparently.
Woo!
Are you a chess player, Sam?
Honestly, I'm not. I got taught by my friend Ed at some point, either this year or last year, very briefly. But apart from that, no. I really don't play chess, which is quite bad, to be honest. But what about you?
I do. I picked up chess during COVID, like most people, it seems. You know, nothing to do, sitting at home watching Netflix all day. And the Netflix show called The Queen's Gambit came out. It was pretty okay. Downloaded the, you know, chess.com app, and I've been playing pretty much daily since then, and I have not improved at all. Someone's asking my Elo. I forget what the designation are, but like there's like 10 minutes and below, and then over 10 minutes, and then there's something else. But yeah, I'm like a 700 player, which is not great.
Well, fortunately for you, I do not know what that means, so you're in the clear there.
I mean, it's kind of like a random number if you don't have anything to compare it to.
Yeah.
But I am, I can beat beginners most of the time, is kind of where I would.
That is good. I mean, I'm very proud of you.
So we have, right now in the game, there is just the Queen's Challenge. Right, and that will show off the scenery too. So you know, we can talk about the scenery. Do you like the scenery? Do you like the skin?
I think it's fine. I haven't come out in awe of it particularly, but I think on the whole it's okay. I felt the scenery was lacking something. You know, we often get quite a lot of detail with sceneries. But with the chess one, it was a lot of very, very big objects, and it all felt a bit empty. I don't know if you felt the same.
Yeah, it's. I think the art looks good. It's kind of a cool concept. I'm used to there being a lot more in the sceneries, I guess.
Mm.
So yeah, it does. It feels a little more plain. I kind of think it fits with chess too, being such a classic game, and you know, a little more straightforward and focused. The skin, I hate the queen skin.
Really, you hate it?
Yeah, when go do the challenge. The challenge is awesome. We'll talk about the challenge in a second. But like staring at it from the top, when you're looking at it, like in gameplay, it looks exactly like a warden. It moves like a warden. The giant hairdo makes it look like the top of a warden, and then the way she attacks looks like the warden staff too. I could not use it. I'm never gonna equip it because it looks just. Like, yeah, it looks like a warden.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
The challenge, though, what did you think about the challenge designed by our good buddy Trample Damage?
I think it was much, much, much better than some of the other challenges we've seen recently. I think it was much more approachable for, you know, I guess, quote unquote, the average player, whoever that is. I think it had a, you know, quite a unique, it was a unique approach where I haven't really seen any sort of challenges, which is all about sneaking your queen into different compartments, recalling her, whatnot. I just literally have not seen that. So I like the creativity there. And yeah, I thought it was much more approachable than any other challenges have been recently. So for me, that's a win.
So he was talking to me about it a couple weeks ago when he first offered to help change up the design. I'm sure he's going to talk about it a lot on his podcast. So I don't want to steal all his thunder. But the concept he had for the way it was going to be completed, I think, is really cool and unique. I was really skeptical over how it was going to be received because it is very easy.
Yeah.
That was by design after all the massive amount of complaints from specifically the Queen Charge Challenge last month. That was still, like, I didn't even try it.
No, honestly, I don't really bother with challenges much these days because I don't need the stuff. So I kind of like, yes, I could get the gems, but honestly, I'm really lazy, apparently. So I just haven't bothered.
It was weird seeing all the other creators, how they approached it, actually like using the troops and not showing the intended method. So, but the way he intended it to was your queen starts on the board in the queen starting space, where if you set up a real chessboard and there is a level one wall there. And then she makes only what would be legal queen moves. The second intended spot has a level two wall in the corner and then a 3, 4, and 5 as you recall her through those.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he also designed it in a specific way, too, where if you started somewhere else, there would be too much point defense on her. So if you start her in the first square, there's 4 point defenses hitting her, and then the healers can keep her alive through it really well without a rage or without ability. When you move her to spot 2, one of those point defenses has already been removed, and then there's 4. And then, so just like that, how you're slowly taking one out from the next area, which I think is a really cool concept, and the hint was...
I love that.
Yeah, the hint was really sly, and I told him I love that idea, and it was cool. And when it came out into the dev build for us to actually play... there was all these extra troops on top of it. And then so I was like, I don't know. When you understood the method he intended, it was still fairly straightforward and simple. I know talking with him too, he was saying, hey, like adding all that extra stuff, make sure everyone's still going to be able to complete it on their own, probably the first try. And then also it's going to give people a lot of options to do it. He wanted the challenge to be, you know, how efficiently can you do it? What kind of leftover troops can you swag and all that?
I generally love that approach to challenges. How few troops can you do it in, or how quickly can you do it? Because then it gives you a bit of a chance for that kind of skill expression, right? But it makes then the challenge approachable to everyone. If everyone can do it, that's great, because it doesn't mean everyone's hunched over a YouTube video or just doesn't bother. Then you can still give the people who love to, you know, showboat a little bit an opportunity to do it with less troops, do it quicker, if you know what I mean.
And it was, like, near unanimous praise, too. Everyone seemed to love it. There was only a couple negative comments I saw on YouTube or on Reddit about how easy it was. But, again, too, you know, it's kind of on you to approach it in a way that challenges yourself, which is an interesting take on these in-game challenges, for sure.
Yeah.
Well done, Trample.
It has been one of the best challenges at all recently. So yeah, good job, Trample.
We have one kind of big overarching topic, and we're going to get into a lot of different smaller tangents on it, I'm sure. But recently, there was just the fourth and final community ran Golden Ticket Tournament. So esports has kind of been on my mind for a while, and I know that you and I talk about it a lot. And I just really wanted, there's a whole lot to really dive into here, but there's a couple things I wanted to break it down by. So hopefully this chain makes sense, because I got a million notes here. We're the Reddit community, and there's not really a whole lot of interest in esports. No matter what, we'll try and promote stuff. We try to do live predictions. We will always post the big tournament stuff. We just really can't drive a whole lot of engagement there. And we've talked about the lack of esports interest on Reddit before, so we don't need to rehash it again. But it's just it did get me wondering too, how big is Clash as an esport in general, and why isn't it bigger? My mind just went wild from there. So
all your thoughts just scattered everywhere. So much stuff roaming.
I had a big vacation where I wasn't clashing, so my mind just went into overdrive, like thinking about Clash.
Oh my god! When I was on vacation, not doing Clash, I was thinking about basically everything apart from Clash.
Oh, I mean, you know, like I did other stuff too, but
oh yeah, I'm sure you did.
Like, how big do you really think Clash is as an esport in general?
I mean, I know it's not. It's not really about my perception on this. I really do know it's not that big. When you compare it to actually big esports titles, games like Rocket League, games like CSGO, games like Overwatch, games like Fortnite back in the day. I'm not sure how big the competitive scene is now, but it used to be really large. I mean, you got huge amounts of the player base really invested in it. I mean, it's like supporting your football team, right? People were that into supporting esports teams in those games. But Clash of Clans, if you ask, I reckon 95% of players name an esports team that plays in Clash of Clans, they would not be able to tell you one, because I just think there is a real lack of interest. So yeah, I know it's small.
Opening Twitch right now, and there's, on the whole Clash channel, there's less than 100 people watching Clash right now.
Wow. Yeah, that's nothing. That is actually nothing.
Middle of a weekday, too, here in the U.S. at least. It's a holiday, but, you know, still, like, it's not an indictment of everything Clash overall, but it's still, it's not very impressive. There's not a big war going on right now either, it looks like. But even when there are, too, like, you'll see a Clash stream. If a Clash stream has 100 people on it, that's big for a Clash stream, you know? Like, even the major non-World Final stuff, too, kind of caps out at, like, 200 people, it seems, if it's one of the more popular pro players.
Yeah, and then I think when Clash Worlds is on, as in the proper main event, you maybe get a few thousand people watching it live. If you just compare that to the really big esports titles, it's tiny.
Yeah, it's overall, like, Clash just wasn't built to be an esport. It's not designed for an entertaining viewing experience, I think. You know, I'll come back to that in a second, but just since you were talking about the numbers of viewers of the World Championship too. So there's a site, esports charts, escharts.com, that will show you. And if you want more stats, you have to pay for a membership, which was, I was not about to do just for this. Yeah. But for the 2021 finals, and people were ever like, that was not an in-person finals. That was still like peak COVID lockdown era. The peak viewership for 2021 World Finals was 35,000 viewers. And in 2022, that jumped up to 65,000. So it is, you know, it did grow, at least. I couldn't look further back.
Yeah. I mean, that's higher than I expected. Though obviously, that is peak viewership, not average viewership, which could be quite lower, I imagine.
Clash isn't in any of, like, the top charts for, you know, most stream games. Or if you look at the Twitch charts or anything, it's not anywhere. It's not in the top 250, at least. You know, it could be 251 because the charts just end at a certain point. It seems like there are just dedicated people who, you know, have favorite teams and players, or, you know, friends or people they know in the rather small community. And yeah, it's just a small community of dedicated people who just watch a whole lot of Clash, it seems.
And I think if you consider that, I'd imagine millions of people still play the game every single day, and you talk about 65,000 peak viewership for the biggest esports tournament, right? So we're not even talking about most other tournaments, which get a fraction of the publicity and in-game promotion. The percentage of people that play Clash and watch esports, it would be discounted as an anomaly or a margin of error if you actually digest it. It would be rounded down to 0%, right?
Yeah, there is good interest in the World Finals too. It's enough for Supercell to justify like a $1.3 million prize pool for the World Finals.
Yeah.
And, you know, funny, each of the golden tickets were $50,000 prize pools, right? So, like, they're putting decent money into it. You know,
I agree. But it's once again, it's not as much as the proper esports titles put in. They talk about a 1 million prize pool, right? Since you may get led into the trap of thinking, oh, if you win, you get a million. But that's a million for the entire series, if you will. So
the winners of the world finals, it's $300,000.
Yeah, which is still like amazing.
Yeah, you're also splitting it between, you know, all five players. You know, like the, you know, however many base builders are going to get a cut of that.
Yeah.
If you're sponsored by an organization, they're going to take that. You're going to pay taxes on it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not life changing money for any individual involved, but it's still enough to motivate people to aspire for it, which is cool.
Yeah, I think also if you just think of the context of Clash of Clans pro players, I mean, obviously they dedicate a lot of their time to it, but take, this is the only example I actually know of. I'm sure that there are many more, but I just want to use this as I actually know it's confirmed. Maxi, if you remember him, Tribe Gaming player, he was a lawyer as well. He had a job on top of being a pro player. I think if you look at the big esports titles, those pro players, that's their job. That's what they do for a living. But I'd imagine very few Clash of Clans pro players actually do, you know, they do it for, no. I can't imagine many of them do it for a living because you can't.
I believe it's the Competitive Clash Network server will track teams' winnings throughout the whole year. And I saw it posted in a different server. Shout out to CTJ guys. They are, someone posted the year to date winnings, and there's only 8 teams who have cleared $10,000. And like the top team, I believe, was Tribe, and they are just under 50K for the year in winnings.
Is that this year?
Yeah, that was 2023, right? Like year to date, I believe.
Right, okay, gotcha.
No one's living off that.
And when you think of how much money Supercell probably makes, a million into esports isn't probably that much either. Otherwise, like you said, they wouldn't put a million in, right? They will put investment in, which they see as cost effective, and they probably know Clash of Clans esports doesn't get a huge, huge audience. So by their standards, I guarantee you, or not by their standards, but by a percentage of their overall profits, I can guarantee you a million is not that much to them.
Clash Ninja is bringing up a good point too, that a lot of them do also.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Yeah, do also do content creation, so they're getting, you know, revenue from that as well. It's not only, you know, income from winning events too, but, you know, still, you know, like that's almost beside the point too. But I guess moving on from money, I said it earlier too, but I did want to get your thoughts on Clash wasn't built to be an esport. It's not a game that necessarily would lend itself well to being an esport too. So I was just wondering if you had any thoughts on maybe why.
I think the main reason it doesn't work as an esport is that in theory it's a team game, but you don't see it being played as a team because that's not actually how wars work as a whole. And also, I think you mentioned this as well before, you only really see half of the game in terms of the fact that it's base building, defense, is in theory half the game, and that a lot of work goes into base building, but you don't see that at all. So you're missing half the game already because no one really appreciates good base building, right? You just see people fail, but there's not that real engagement with the process, right?
Yeah, I can name 2 base builders in all of Clash, and one is because we interviewed them on a previous episode, and the other is friends of friends of friends, and we have ended up playing on a team together too, and that's it. So yeah, there is not any I think people recognize the skill it takes, but not the individual players.
Oh no, definitely not.
You watch any other like real sport or esport, you will see players doing offense and defense and back and forth and switching and reacting live to things too, and that's just not possible in Clash of Clans because there is skill to defense, but it's kind of preset. And so it's it's not a visible part of the game. There's no way to react and change on the fly because there are even throughout the whole 3-day World Finals tournament, you're going to have so many bases and you're not going to be able to build new bases right before the event.
It's not very, it's just not really centered around the team as well, is it? Like, I know you're in a clan, I know it's a 5v5, but you're watching individual players
attack
individual bases. There's nothing continuous about it. If I watch a football game, I'm watching 11 players on each side constantly running up and down the pitch. I see the offense, I see the defense, I see it all happening continuously. And that's quite engaging. Whereas in Clash of Clans, yeah, you're supporting a team, but they're all actually, they're not playing with each other in the sense. I mean, obviously, I know some people will say, oh, they spot for each other, they plan attacks together.
Yeah, they talk.
Yeah, but apart from that, they're not really playing together. And from a user's point of view, I think a lot of people like seeing team chemistry in team games, and you don't get that.
It's also just slow. Like, even a 5v5 war, where there's only 10 attacks, that's still, it takes an hour.
Yeah,
and there's just a lot of dead air. A good caster, a good announcer will fill that dead air with entertaining stuff.
Yeah, I also think I have complained a lot in the past. I think I've even written about this in a post about how the barrier to entry it's ridiculously high because it's the top, right? You have to be a max or a near to max L15, and that's a problem because it locks out a huge part of the player base. I think actually a really engaging part about lots of esports is the idea that you could do it too. Right, and I think even people watch that, if people think that for regular sports as well. But say I'm watching someone play Overwatch, for example, right? That's a free game. They have basically all the stuff I have. I know Overwatch has now paywalled some stuff or made you unlock characters, but go with me here. Yeah, I know that I could hop on and in theory do that. In practice, could I ever play like them? No, of course not. But you don't feel like there's a barrier there. You feel like that could be you, and you're very much in their situation, right? You have games like them. Your playing experience is like them. Obviously, it's a completely different level, but at the core, that's what it's like. But with Clash of Clans, you have to be a Channel 15. You have to have played the game for years. If you are a Channel 10, you can watch Clash of Clans esports, and you can think, oh, that's cool, but it doesn't engage with you because you're nowhere near that level. You can't pick up your phone and try to be a part of that, so you're years off it. And I know there are competitive scenes for lower town halls. You know, people do run Town 10 tournaments, people do run Town 11 tournaments, and so on. But that's not the main arena, right? Pro teams, they operate at the highest town hall level. And it's the barrier to entry, I think it just disengages people from the entire scene.
Which is what motivates a lot of people to buy accounts too.
Mm.
During World Final stuff, there's always a big list of teams that get disqualified because they will scan bases. They will boot people out of the tournament who they suspect, you know, have bought and sold the accounts they want to use to enter. You know, like, putting aside the ethics of that, you know, I know Reddit has, you know, like, we specifically have taken hard stances on it all before. If there were a Supercell approved route to getting a max account, whatever that might be, even if it's only for competitive play, I think that would be a welcome change.
Yeah, but then I guess even then you fall into the same trap that people who actually have a Town Hall 15, they can constantly play Town Hall 15 regular wars, they can constantly do friendly challenges, they can play with it, they can practice for it. If you just offer a Town Hall 7, a Town Hall 15 account just for competitive play, what are they going to do with it? They're not going to achieve anything because that's just not what they can practice on. That's not the level they're at.
Another thing too that's really frustrating is just how difficult it is to really stay up to date on everything that's happening too. We're talking a lot about World Finals, which is five tournaments and then the finals. So it's really not a whole lot. And that stuff is really heavily promoted through official Supercell channels, you know, on their in-game and all their social media and, you know, the posts on Reddit and everything else. just there's so much more to the competitive Clash scene than just World Finals. There's so many small tournaments going on. I never know what's going on.
Yeah, so this is a huge gripe of mine. I think this is one of the things I dislike the most about esports, is that it's just impossible to follow. I think I'm 99% sure I even raised this with Darren when we had him on. I pointed out the fact that possibly Supercell could introduce some more coherent way to find ongoing tournaments, find the brackets, find the scores. Because, for example, if I want to look at the latest football scores, I go on BBC Sports, I can see the Prem, I can see Champions League, I can see international games, I can see everything. I can see everything there. And it's easy, right? Anyone can do that. It's a lovely, nice interface on a website. With Clash of Clans, yeah, you can sort of follow Worlds, but even then, you've now got to follow the four or so independent golden ticket events. So, and they promote their tournaments, they display their graphics, they put their information in all sorts of different formats on their own websites, on their own social media pages. So even just following Clash Worlds can be hard from that perspective. But then, like you said, there are so many other tournaments, right? And how does one follow them? I don't think they do. I think at best, people watch their favourite streamers stream wars. Their streamer might go, oh yeah, we're into the semi-finals of the Hurricane Cup. We got Navi versus Tribe Gaming. And that's as much as you know. You don't know the brackets, you don't know the scores. You don't know anything. I mean, do you have any ideas of how this could be improved by someone just taking a really big personal interest in it and making a website themselves?
The only stuff I know is because I play on a team that like likes to pretend we're tryhards, and you know, like we're just out there having a good time. And there is, I'm gonna make this sound a lot more serious than it really is. But like we're managed by a real pro who plays for Find the Space.
Right. Yeah.
So how I stay up to date with the stuff that's going on is once a week or so, there will just be a ping in our little Discord chat that says, hey, who's available at this time for this tournament? And then I show up and we're always like, okay, who are we playing and what's going on and what's this for? And then that's it. I think I mentioned it a second ago, Competitive Clash Network, the CCN Discord server. I'll put a link to it in the show notes of this one. I believe that is kind of the central hub that you were looking for.
Yes, I'm in that Discord server.
And I know, like, then I don't like I don't want to get into, you know, a lot of the other stuff that goes on there too. There's been a lot of drama lately. I don't know how much what's true or what not. So we want to go to, but it has been alleged it's been a fairly toxic place. I guess, you know, fair warning if you head there, or simply using it as a source of information to track down what happens in the competitive Clash scene, I believe that's the place most people use.
Yeah, and it's fine, right? It's like, by all accounts, it's good, and obviously the moderators, people who maintain the server, keep the information up to date. I'm sure they're doing God's work there, because I know like it's not an easy job. But equally, a Discord server is not the most intuitive place to find it, I'd say. And I think that the way it's presented, I mean, I totally know they try their best, but it's going to be inconsistent for each tournament, right? Because they're going to get provided different graphics by the tournament organizers. There's only so much information they can get, and it's a lot of work to really standardize everything and whatnot. I totally get it's a lot of work, but it's I think core to getting people to follow the entire scene. It's, you know, giving them an easy platform to view the information on, to view the scores, to view teams. Like people will need some sort of interaction. Otherwise, you can't support a team if you don't know what they're playing in, if you don't know how well they're doing, if you don't know who they've got next. It's just not the same. It's a big disconnect.
All right. So one of the other things I see a lot of people I asked too is like, hey, is 5v5 war the best way to go about competitive Clash or determining the world champions of Clash of Clans? Because there are other game modes, you know, like Builder Base and Clan Capital. Like, do we really need to justify those suggestions with discussion though? Or is it really just kind of nonsense to think that the possibility of the Clash World Championships could be based on something that's not Meet Home Village?
I mean, I'm going to spend 30 seconds on this because we've talked about it before on podcast previously. I think at the end of the day, Builder Base, no. Clan Capital, as I said, we talked about it before and I've written an even entire post about it. I think they could potentially make it work, but we need a whole rework. And then also, it's not the main game. It's not what people play. I think it needs to be based on the home village, right? I think that's a core thing there. The esports side of the main game cannot be based on a side piece. Like, could you imagine if the Clash Worlds was based on the stupid little arcade machine that we had for the Clashiversary last year? I mean, it's got to be the main game, right? We can't have, what was it called, like Clash Dash deciding the world champions of Clash of Clans. It's got to be the home village.
Right. All right, so then the other big alternative too that I kind of wanted to bring up too was we talked about earlier where the World Championship is all max Town Hall 15 right now. You know, in the following year, presumably, it'll be all Town Hall 16.
Yeah.
But what about a mixed Town Hall level championship, something of a lot bigger and maybe a broader team with, you know, Town Halls of varying levels? Would that be a possibility or something you might be interested in watching?
Maybe. I don't see how it would solve some of the fundamental problems we discussed. Potentially barrier of entry, it would solve. But I think it introduced new problems. For example, lower town halls, they typically get easier, right? And that leads to tournament organisers imposing restrictions on things like siege machines or types of troops. And how is that standardised if that becomes a mainstream thing?
Yeah, that's something that we're going to come back to in a minute.
Okay.
I do want to hammer that hard.
Yeah, right. We'll kind of push that to the side, but that's the problem I think with mixed town hall walls.
I think what makes it an option too of just not being all max accounts, whether it's either including lower town hall accounts or making it entirely lower town hall accounts, is because Clash Royale does that. Clash Royale is not all maxed cards. Clash
right.
Royale, the world championship there is like, there is a competitive mode that caps card levels at, I want to say, level 11.
I have no idea
off the top of my head, but it would be like, essentially, you know, imagine if we had a Town Hall 12 world championship,
right? Yeah,
it's just capped at a lower level, and like that's where balance is super important, is, you know, like that level, so they can kind of let things get OP and nerfed out of Extinction, you know, more often, but, you know, they really have to manage level 11 specifically. Where that leads us is the overall big debate that's always going on too of pro versus, you know, more casual players and how to balance the game for what. The big argument I've seen over the last month is Super Barbs and Sarch Blimps. People saying that strategy is overpowered. I don't know, like, what's your take on the whole Super Barb, Super Archer, Blimp stuff?
So that specifically, you know, taking it away from the larger pro versus casual debate, I think specifically that strat, I remember being quite alarmed by it when I saw it a lot in Pro Wars, but then I think you and a few other people, some clanmates, pointed out that actually it can be countered by good base building. If you have closed compartments, it is much harder to let the heroes just scroll through the base. And sure, you can have a bunch of super wall breakers, but that then dramatically reduces the amount of super barbs you have. So I was initially alarmed, and I did see quite a few pros on Twitter having a good whine about it. But I think on the whole, if you can just build against it, it's not as big as a problem as some people have been making it out to be.
It doesn't work as well if you close the walls of your base. And, you know, that means other things too, but those open walls exist for a reason, you know, for pathing and a whole lot of other things, but it makes you vulnerable to super barbs. Yeah, I think base builders just need a little more time to adapt. Specifically, like the one match and tournament that people, that's causing people to freak out. There was just a lot of bases that were vulnerable to it, and it kind of got exploited. But you know, Chasey Ace released a huge compilation of stats from Clash Masters. Sarch Super Barb was used a total of 45 times. 9.6% of the attacks in the whole tournament were that, which is not a lot. It's the second highest used comp. Queen Charge Hogs was used more, and that's the only one that was used more. The hit rate on it was 57%, which is high. That's good. But that's also good, you know, like of the main used attacks, there were higher hit rates too. QC Lalo was used 45 times, 9.4%. Had a slightly higher hit rate of 3 stars. Skelly Lalo had a 72% hit rate and was used 25 times, which is still a decent amount. But of all the ones that were used a lot, it doesn't really stand out as overpowered to me.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of overblown overreaction to that strategy. Which I think I got a little bit swept up in as well. I remember when I first saw it, I did think, what is this? You know, and I guess a lot of people kind of jumped to a lot of conclusions quickly, like me as well. But yeah, I think that strategy overall isn't a problem. But pro versus casual balance has been a discussion long before Super Archer, Super Barbarian. Attacks.
And I know the thing that was really eating away at me that I really wanted to just rant about was like, yeah, the way this argument always like eventually ends is people talk about having a separate build for pro clash and then for everyone else too. So you can so the balance can be adjusted, you know, so pros aren't getting 15 stars or 15 star ties, you know, decided by time all the time, which would ruin competitive clash. It would be so insanely boring. No one would watch it.
Yeah.
If that were the case, and being able to make the game easier for more casual players. I still don't know a perfect term, because like I don't want to call myself a casual player, because I think I take it more seriously than that. Obviously, we're mods on the sub and we do a podcast, and I do try hard. So you know, like casual doesn't sum it up, but I guess you know it's pro or not pro. I'm just calling everyone that's not a pro casual. Anyway. But yeah, it always kind of like rears its head as making a separate build, like an esports build that can be balanced differently. And I think you pointed out a problem with something else too, is like that's not the game. Like that would be that's us watching kind of a separate game. I don't want to watch pros do stuff I'm not capable of repeating, or stuff I couldn't hope to, at least.
Yeah.
Itsu brought it up recently. He was on Pineapples and Thorns, that podcast, and the whole interview was fantastic. It's definitely worth an hour of anyone's time if they want to go listen two or three episodes ago. They had Itsu on. It was great. But like even he was saying eventually it's probably going to have to happen, and I don't want to see that, and I think it's crazy.
Yeah, I think that's also not helpful for the pros, because in what scenarios are you allowed to use this esports build? For example, can you do your legends attacks with it? Can it be a toggler options for regular wars? Can it be an FC option? And that's a load of decisions you've got to make. And I think like you alluded to me saying earlier, that's just another way you increase the disconnect between the people watching it.
The thing that I never hear anyone bring up, and it's wild to me too, is like we have a solution to this problem. Like the solution exists already and everyone is already familiar with it. The same thing you said, you know, earlier in the podcast was lower town halls just restrict stuff because 9v9 is insanely unbalanced. Those would be 15v15 star wars. So the way they get around it and make it competitive and fun is they just restrict what you can use. There's banned troops, banned spells, things like that. There are a million ways you could restrict the strength of town hall 15 offense to make it competitive for pros without the need for a whole separate build in the game.
Just, you know, I'd like to bring attention to what Ninja's been saying as well, because I was also thinking this earlier, that this whole debate seems very manufactured in terms that I don't often actually see the problem. I don't see a lot. I don't see a lot of 15-15 Star Wars. And, you know, Ninja's pointing out the pros are all complaining about balancing, but they're not producing those perfect wars every single time. It just doesn't happen. So where's the problem?
There are a lot of pros that have 70-80% hit rates, which is bananas, too. Also, yeah, it is always, yeah, it's framed as like being more the norm in the pro scene too, where that is not at all. That's like the top 1% of clashers, the top 0001, just like Sam was saying here, you know, where, yeah, even Town Hall 14 didn't really see many 15-star wars, and everyone says Town Hall 14 was the easiest town hall ever. Like I was saying a minute ago, like there's a million things you could do to restrict the offensive strength of Town Hall 15. You know, use 280 instead of 320 troop space, or 9 out of your 11 spells. Competitive Clash literally already does this when there are temporary troops out. You know, when there's Royal Ghosts, you can't use those in competitive play. Just up until 3 days ago, all the tournaments were saying no party whiz.
Yeah.
You know, like this, the concepts exist in Competitive Clash. Like, I don't see huge deal with them too. Tons of other esports do it too. The, you know, Call of Duty and CS:GO from time to time will ban certain weapons from competitive play. Rocket League has banned cars, like certain cars, the stupid buggy thing, Scarab, whatever. Like, you couldn't do that. I don't know if you can now, but it's not an unheard of concept. So I don't know why people would be so opposed to it in Clash of Clans.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think fundamentally, there should definitely never be a second competitive build. I think we're both in agreement on that. And I think you're right. If something did really need balancing, I do definitely like your approach. Like you said, already exists, which is, you know, just take away stuff. But also, we don't need these kind of balances. We're not seeing people come out getting 15-15 Star Wars. It just doesn't happen.
So a lot of that is kind of like a preemptive counter argument to us casual players saying that the balance changes with the Town Hall 15 refresh didn't go far enough, and we need to be bringing up the hit rates of more casual players still, which would push the pro hit rates closer to being just insane.
Mm.
So it's more about like. Like a lot of people, myself included, I'll say, like, I think Town Hall 15 needs to be, I think most people need to have a higher hit rate in Clash Clans. And we need to ignore the effects of balance for pros, because they can, you know, they can artificially restrict strength themselves, and it's fine.
Yeah, I do think that's a balance, right? I do think that at the end of the day, the game shouldn't be so easy that if you don't cap certain people, they can always three star a base, essentially. I think there is definitely a limit to how far that can go, but yeah, on the whole, I'm with you.
Yeah, so then two last things I will say. The base cooldown should be eliminated during competitions too. I kind of said why earlier. I just want to get that, like, saying I do think that needs to happen, just because it would allow those pro teams to adapt, like, during the competition. If you see, you know, hey, there's like a cool new strategy, or you find out, oh, this team is really good at, you know, the super barbs things, like, you should be able to fix your bases real quick and react and make them, you know, plan other attacks in the
right
prep they actually get.
Maybe to ensure that stays balanced, you don't allow them to use those new bases in FCs still for 24 hours, because that way that avoids pros obviously scouting their enemy spaces and really quickly trying to build them and FC against them, for example. But yeah, I'd agree with you on that.
Finally, something I saw suggested on the sub, and one of our listeners, Godly too, is he was saying something that may help is introducing a fourth star. And I believe what he said, and correct me if I'm wrong, in the chat here, Godly, that giving away a fourth star somewhere around 80% might actually help break things up and reduce some of those ties.
Maybe. I mean, maybe I'm not properly considering the impact it could have. But a lot of attacks pass the 80% margin. Obviously, not all. There are a fair few that don't, but a lot do. And I don't know, I just can't see it fundamentally solving the problem. I mean, maybe I'm not properly considering its impacts, but I just can't see how that addresses most of the problems.
With Town Hall 15 hit rates the way they are, I think we're all fairly accepting of like a decent percent two-star, right? Is that how you feel? If you get a good percent two-star, are you can accept that, right?
Yeah, like
it's not a three, but it doesn't feel like you failed.
Yeah, for example, saying Climber League, I think I got an 80-something percent hit. I was a bit annoyed because I think I wasted my queen ability, you know, used a spell, whatever. But I did some silly things. I was annoyed that I couldn't triple, but I didn't come out of it thinking, oh my god, I've cost us the war. I came out of it thinking, yeah, 80 or so percent two-star, I'm happy.
Where, like, what percentage would you, like, where do you draw that line between a good percentage and a bad percentage?
If it's below 70... I am a little bit annoyed because I can see visibly a lot of the base still left. I'm thinking, oh, that stings. I mean, ultimately, as long as I get a 2-star, I won't be going to bed still thinking about it. because it's rare Clan War League is decided on percent, right? Not there never is, and I've had plenty of wars which are, but on the whole, it's not going to kill us like a few 1-stars could.
If I'm getting below 70%, I'm mad at myself.
Yeah.
If I get in the 70, I'm disappointed. I'd say 80s, I think, okay, that's acceptable. I can live with that. Most of the 90s I feel is good. And yeah. You know, and then I'm back to like, if it's a 98, 99, then I'm back to annoyed.
I was about to say, it's a weird curve, yeah, there, isn't it? Curve of disappointment.
Yeah, it's not a bell curve.
No, it's definitely not.
Looking back at the agenda, did we cover it all?
I think we've done it. I think we've done it.
Anything else you want to add?
No. I don't really want to end up just repeating myself because I'm quite good at doing that. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. For shout-outs, I just want to say, I talked about it earlier, but the Pineapples and Thorns podcast had a really awesome Itsu interview 2 weeks ago, maybe. It's really good and definitely worth your time. To go check it out. It's a great podcast. It's, you know, one I listen to all the time anyway. And then another special shout out to Magic Junior. He is the developer of Clash King. He is joining us next episode. We're going to be talking to him. And man, Spencer and I have been talking to Magic a lot the last week. It's going to be a great episode. He's a developer. He's super deep in playing in the API. He has given us so many fun stats to talk about, a whole lot of insight into the game. It feels like top secret behind the scenes info because it's the kind of stuff Supercell doesn't really make public. But you can make a lot of educated guesses from just what's publicly available in the API if you pull enough data. And holy hell, this guy pulls a lot of data. It's going to be a really fun one. I hope you join us in 2 weeks. Sam, is there anyone you want to shout out?
I'd kind of just like to shout out the 4 clan members who are going to be joining me into the world's qualifiers. I think we start on Thursday. We have really no ambitions of getting anywhere, but it's going to be a bit of fun. So that's Davey, actually a former moderator here, Francie, I'm going to pronounce his name wrong, I'm really sorry, Zinx, yeah, I'm terrible at pronouncing X's, and Necro. So it's going to be a lot of fun, I think. Probably going to lose. But it's going to be good fun.
Well, one more shout out. I just noticed Clashfan9 is here, host of the Clash Rules podcast. You guys should go check out, listen to. Definitely for a more mature crowd. It's going to have that E for explicit on
which,
it.
Which I have been praying for.
Yeah, very, very funny. Very, very funny, awesome episodes. And great insights into the game, too, from the Clash Rules. And also, Clashfan, I would love to hear your guys' opinion on artificial restrictions as a means of balancing pro play too. If the game gets balanced more for casuals too, then what pros can do is just use less troops, do no sieges, you know, a lot like how lower town halls do. If you guys need a topic, please, I would love to hear all your opinion and all the other podcast opinions on it too.
Yeah, I'd also like to give one final shout out to a redditor who has just applied to removal I made, and I think everyone would like to read it. He said, bruh, go yourself. How you remove my post because it isn't a discussion. Of course it is. We're discussing my base and any advice from the community. Terrible moderator, first and last time on this Reddit page. So thank you. I've gladly taken your criticism on board and I literally do not give. So yeah.
Alright, that's gonna be cut.
No, it's
because
not.
Because we do not mark the E for explicit.
Oh, but I wish we did. I'd have so much more fun.
I will tell you why later. There are reasons.
We can beep it. That's why I think we should.
Yeah,
can beep.
I've had to beep you a lot. I cuss a lot. Like when in our voice chats, I swear all the time.
Yeah.
But I know when to turn it on and off.
Okay, but
and you slip in a shit to like every single episode.
Okay, but this time it was for the authenticity of the disgruntled user who I felt needed to be perfectly represented.
If you really want me to leave it in and have your comment have like 9 bleeps, that might actually be funny.
That would be really funny. Please do.
So anyway, let's say goodbye and we will end it for the week. Thank you guys so much for joining us live. I know we kind of got a little off the rails there at the end. For those of you listening live, the podcast is Reddit Talks Clash. You're going to be able to download it hopefully tomorrow from anywhere you download podcasts at. It's everywhere. And if it's not your favorite platform, go ahead and let me know and I will get it added. We're going to be live again in 2 weeks with Magic Junior, who is now committed and cannot change his mind. He's here in the chat. Say hi. Yeah, Sam, do you have anything else?
No, I think I'm good.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Have a good one, everyone.